You're listening to Clinical Conversations. I'm Joe Elia. A paper presented at the European Society for Cardiology earlier this month and simultaneously released in the New England Journal of Medicine has created excitement about the treatment of heart failure. The results of the study, called the Paradigm HF trial, show that a single pill formulation of two drugs could improve survival in these patients. The formulation, called LCZ-696, was tested against the ACE inhibitor enalapril, which has been standard therapy for years. LCZ-696 afforded a roughly 20% relative survival advantage during 2 years of follow-up. Here to talk about LCZ-696 are the paper's first two authors, Professor John McMurray of the University of Glasgow and Dr. Milton Packer of the University of Texas. Welcome to you both.
It's good to be here.
Thank you, yes.
Is it fair to say that the treatment that LCZ-696 is less a new molecular discovery than it is the application of what's already known about the pathophysiology of heart failure?
Well, it's John McMurray here. I think it's both of those things. We have understood for some time that inhibition of the enzyme neprilysin might be a good thing in heart failure. And likewise, we've known for some time, obviously, that inhibition of the renin-angiotensin system is definitely a good thing in heart failure. What's novel here is that we've put these two strategies together in a single molecule and been successful where we've failed to be successful either using neprilysin inhibition alone or using neprilysin inhibition combined with ACE inhibition.
And in fact, what is interesting is that for the last 25 years, our focus in treating patients with heart failure has been to antagonize adverse or maladaptive systems, mm-hmm. such as the renin-angiotensin system, sympathetic nervous system, whereas this approach not only does that, but it also enhances the body's adaptive mechanisms, the peptides that actually promote compensation in the circulation. And this is the first time that that approach has been shown to be successful in the treatment of heart failure.
Milton, I suppose we should say why neprilysin inhibition combined with ACE inhibition failed in the past. In theory, it should work for the reasons that you've outlined, but of course there was one problem that perhaps we didn't anticipate would be as big as it was, and that was the risk of serious angioedema, because both neprilysin and angiotensin-converting enzyme break down bradykinin, and the particular molecule that we studied previously that was a neprilysin ACE inhibitor, i.e. omeprazolat, that drug may even have inhibited the third key enzyme in bradykinin metabolism, and it was that combination and accumulation of bradykinin that led to a significant risk of serious angioedema and really stopped any further development of that pharmacological approach.
Now, that angioedema shows up a little in the current study, doesn't it?
There's two ways to look at angioedema. Remember, angioedema is reasonably common allergic reaction. Mm. But, and for example, ACE inhibitors all by themselves are associated with angioedema. But the angioedema that really worried us about omeprazolat was life-threatening, serious angioedema. The kind that causes respiratory distress. Mm-hmm. We did not see in the Paradigm trial.
Okay. Professor McMurray, you mentioned earlier you called LCZ-696 a molecular entity. Is it really a single molecule, or is it the combination, the formulation of two drugs in a single pill package?
Well, it's not two drugs in a capsule together in the way that we think of most combination drugs. Mm-hmm. It is a molecule where the two components are bound, chemically bound together.
Okay.
And interestingly bound together in a fixed ratio. So I think it is a little different to what most people would consider a combination pill, but it okay. is indeed two separate chemical entities. There is sacubitril, which is the neprilysin inhibitor, and valsartan, which is the angiotensin receptor blocker.
Okay. Well,
I think the best way for your audience to think about this is, instead of thinking about it as a combination pill, to think of it as a molecular complex.
Okay. All right. From organic chemistry, right, there's a covalent bond lurking in the shadows right. somewhere. Okay.
It's actually a hydrogen bond in this case.
Okay.
Right.
All right. Now, the number needed to treat, according to the study, to prevent one death from cardiovascular causes is about 30, 34. Can you put this into perspective for the listeners?
Well, there are many ways to think about this. Remember that that number, and we should explain what that number means.
Mm-hmm.
That number means that if you treated 32 patients over the duration of the trial, you would prevent one cardiovascular death.
Mm-hmm.
What's remarkable here is that this is against active therapy with enalapril, which has been the gold standard.
I see.
So this was not this drug against placebo. This was an incremental benefit on top of enalapril.
Okay.
And furthermore, patients in both groups were receiving best possible therapy, other therapies for heart failure that are known to prolong life. So this is a very meaningful incremental improvement, both based on the type of patients and the comparator, and also the fact that these patients were otherwise getting the best available therapy.
Okay.
These are difficult comparisons to make across trials, and in a way we've tried to avoid doing that, but the most recent example, Milton, that I can recall is emphysis heart failure, where we compared a mineralocorticoid receptor antagonist to placebo, and in that trial, the number needed to treat to prevent one death was 34. So with all the caveats of these between trial comparisons, I think it gives you some sense of our active control trial versus that placebo-controlled trial with a very effective treatment, as it turned out.
Yeah, I just wanted I wanted clarification, and you've given it that number needed to treat was relative to enalapril therapy.
Yeah.
Press accounts predict the cost of the drug will be in the neighborhood of $2,500 a year. Have you seen those accounts? Are you aware of any price estimates for LCZ-696?
We've seen those accounts. Frankly speaking, we don't know where those accounts come from because we've not been privy to any discussions about what this drug will cost. I think that from what we understand, the sponsor hasn't actually even made that determination. So I imagine there's a lot of speculation going on.
Uh-huh.
But we don't know, and right now I don't think anyone knows.
Okay. Speaking of the sponsor, they were a partner in this work. And so can you give us a sense of their control over the design of the trial and the handling of the data as it arrived? Were you given access to the data at all stages?
So, Milton, I'm sure, will add his perspective. But from my perspective, the design of the trial was very much led by us in conjunction with the sponsor. In fact, Milton, my recollection is that when we first sat down to discuss the possibility of a trial, this was going to be a much smaller trial with a completely different purpose. So in that sense, I believe that with the sponsor, the design was completely in our hands and at our initiative. In terms of the data, we've had full access to the data. The database was transferred here to Glasgow University, and the analyses that are in the New England Journal article were independently checked by a statistician at this institution. So I think, Milton, we're completely comfortable that we've had free and full access.
Well, not only that, but I think everyone should understand that the analyses that were carried out here were pre-planned. That is, that they were structured analyses that were put on paper before anyone had access to the final data and the treatment assignments.
They were baked into
so
the design.
Essentially, okay. There was a mutual agreement between the investigators and the sponsor as to how the data would be structured, organized, analyzed, and we were responsible for the interpretation of it and entirely responsible for the writing of the manuscript.
Good. Okay.
And Milton, the pre-specified statistical analysis plan was also sent to the FDA well in advance of database lock.
All right. Well, fair enough. What are the likely paths of future research in heart failure, given the success of LCZ-696?
Well, one of the things that is really interesting is that this does open up a new way of thinking about heart failure and new pathways. But it's important to understand that we studied one type of heart failure, and that is we studied the most common form of heart failure, which is heart failure that's associated with a reduced ejection fraction. There are a meaningful number of patients throughout the world who have heart failure associated with a preserved ejection fraction. Those patients weren't studied in this trial, but they are being studied in a new trial called Paragon, which is also evaluating LCZ-696 and has just begun.
I see. And are you involved with that?
We both are.
You both are?
Yes.
Oh, good.
Milton, I think the interesting thing that Paradigm does for future heart failure research is, of course, question what is the background therapy that any new treatments should be tested against? Should that be our traditional therapies of an ACE inhibitor or ARB if an ACE inhibitor isn't tolerated? Or really, in the future, are we going to expect new treatments to show incremental benefit over and above what we've seen with LCZ-696? I'm sure that question is in a few people's mind at the moment.
All right. Any advice for clinicians while they await FDA action on LCZ?
We would be delighted if they read our paper, and we'd be delighted if they became familiar with the mechanism of action and the results and how using this drug benefits patients that is above and beyond what they could achieve with current inhibitors of the renin-angiotensin system. I think it would be good for them to talk to their colleagues, attend conferences that may discuss the results of these trials, and then await the action of regulatory agencies throughout the world who will do their own due diligence. And at that particular point in time, the clinicians will be fully prepared to put a drug like this to optimal use.
Professor McMurray, we'll give you the final word if you'd like it.
Well, I agree with what Milton said. I mean, I think if I was a physician, and I am a physician, thinking about using this drug, I would be thinking about how I will organize my practice to switch my patients when the drug becomes available, because we haven't had time to talk about some of the details of the results, but not only was the effect pretty impressive, but it was also an effect that occurred rapidly. So in my view, when I have the opportunity to switch patients from existing therapy to this new treatment, I would like to take that opportunity as quickly as possible, because I know the benefit accrues very quickly as well. So I suppose my thoughts at the moment are about how I might organize for that to happen.
Okay. Well, congratulations to both of you, and thank you for your time today.
Thank you very much for inviting us.
You're welcome. You're welcome. That was the 174th edition of Clinical Conversations. The others can be found at podcasts.jwatch.org. We come to you through the NEJM group. If you've got suggestions for interviews, please contact me at jelia@nejm.org. My executive producers are Kristen Kelly and Adoriano. Thanks so much for listening.